I had my children on the floor. I was on my favourite blanket that my grandmother gave me on the floor like a cat.
And I realised in that moment the potential of what our bodies can really do as women.
Like, I could feel his head. I could do my own internal, like, yeah, his head, I could feel it.
I was in tears. I was just in tears and overwhelmed with gratitude.
Hi, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast, the podcast that is bringing embodied birth wisdom from women from all over the world sharing their natural birth stories. Don't forget to subscribe and download so that you can always have access to these empowering and positive natural birth stories. Hi, my name is Anna, and I am the Natural Birth Podcast host. I'm a former midwife who left the system, and I'm now the proud founder of Sacred Birth International, a woman-owned company with a mission to revolutionize the birth world and bring focus to the sacred and the natural intelligence of the birth process. We do this by providing world-class education, courses, programs, and coaching to equip women with the knowledge and the tools to have conscious pregnancies, empowering and positive birth experiences, and the most nourishing start possible for themselves and their babies postpartum. We also educate and mentor aspiring birth workers into sacred space holders and physiological birth advocates in the Sacred Birth Worker Mentorship, the Beyond a Doula Training. If you'd like to work with me or take any of our courses, programs, or the mentorship, then head on over to sacredbirthinternational.com to find out more. Today I have some exciting news. This is the 200th episode of the Natural Birth Podcast. Wow, just wow. And we are coming up to 4 years in a few weeks, but first things first, can you believe it? 200 episodes. I know many of you listen to each and every one of these episodes to prepare for your natural birth, and I'm so pleased that I now have 200 unique, natural, and positive birth stories to help you reprogram your subconscious mind. What an epic resource. And speaking of resources, to celebrate this 200th episode, you are welcomed into my online community, The Village, for free for a whole month when joining this week. Being a part of my village means monthly live Q&As and sharing circles with me and the village sisters. It means accessing resources and circles to chat with other birth nerds, maidens, mothers, and magas, as well as my sacred birth worker mentees 24/7. It's a warm, friendly, cozy, and heart-centered village that truly supports women in all stages of life, especially around birth and child rearing. And this week, you can join for free. Get the whole month in the village and meet me and hang out totally free of charge. Yay! Join via the special link in the bio, only found in the bio. I can't wait to see so many of you in there soon. And you'll meet a lot of the women who's been on this podcast in there as well. Come and hang out and celebrate 200 episodes! Yay! Today on the Natural Birth Podcast, we have Amanda. Amanda is a mama of two from Texas. She's a birth photographer, birth assistant, doula and placenta encapsulator, as well as a secretary and social media coordinator for a birth center. She says that she is blessed to mostly work from home and have the ability to homeschool her daughter. In today's episode, we get to hear about her two birth stories. The latest one, I saw powerful photos of on Instagram where Amanda was squatting in such a primal, powerful position, birthing her baby, that I just had to reach out and say, hey, do you want to share your story on the potty? And here she is doing just that. Curious about Amanda? Find her on Instagram as Lover and Beloved. Hi, Amanda, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. How are you?
I'm great. I'm so excited to have you here today to share about your births. I came across you on Instagram with your beautiful birth photos off your second birth. And I just went, oh my God, I just want to hear her story. It was so powerful the way you birthed your baby on that birth stool. And oh, I'm giving it away. Anyway, I'm not going to share too much, but of course I'm going to share one of those gorgeous photos as we air this episode. Anyways, we're not going to talk about photos now. We're going to talk about your baths. So do you want to take us back to when you got pregnant the first time and your journey through your birth experiences and how you ended up at the end there at that powerful moment when you were birthing your baby?
Yes, yes. So I will start by just saying I'm nervous because, you know, sharing your birth, it's just such a vulnerable thing. And I don't feel like I've heard other moms say the word linear on your podcast before, and my life doesn't feel linear to me. And so it comes with a lot of like trepidation that I share just because I feel like, you know, it's not this like picture perfect like life or story, which whose is. But yeah, so I will start. I got married when I was 18 and I moved to Oahu, Hawaii with my partner at the time. And we started trying to get pregnant almost immediately. I always knew that I wanted to be a wife and a mom. That was like number one priority for me. And so we started trying, and come to find out, it's not as easy as they make it sound. We did not get pregnant right away. It took us about right around 2 years of trying. We did do some kind of like infertility work, and they gave me a diagnosis of the, you know, unexplained infertility. And I did not like that diagnosis. And they gave me the option of IUI or IVF. And I didn't really resonate with either of those options. Maybe if we'd been trying a little bit longer, I would have gone that route, but I just felt like I wanted to continue trying to conceive naturally. And I mean, trying, I was using like a period tracking app. So any moms listening who tried that way, there are better ways to try. It was not very accurate, especially for me. But we did end up conceiving finally naturally. And almost immediately, I was seeing an OB who, I don't want to use the word allow, but he did allow me to do kind of a la carte care and decline what I wanted. It was helpful for me that he was born in a different country. And so I think that he had different experience than what we're used to in the US. And so he kind of, you know, allowed me to do my own thing in a way. And I ended up moving at 35 weeks pregnant. So while we were still on the island, we were doing the Bradley method. I had come across a YouTube video from this vlogger, Farmhouse on Boone, and she was doing like a video about her home birth and the Bradley method. And this was like 5 years ago. So I don't even recall ever listening to a podcast at that time. I was mainly watching like YouTube videos and like home births. So I had wanted to have a home birth, and we were going to be moving from Hawaii to Virginia because my ex was in the military and he was changing jobs. So he was going to go to a school in Virginia, and I was going to accompany him, and we were going to have the baby there. And that ended up getting completely turned upside down around 30 to 34 weeks. I found out I couldn't go with him. So I'm kind of, you know, really pregnant, not knowing where I'm going to go. And we just landed on going to New Hampshire. That was where my mom was living at the time, and that's where I'm from. So we went to New Hampshire at 35 weeks pregnant. I went with my dog alone and waited for my spouse at the time to come. And while I'm waiting for him to come, I'm just thinking like, please don't have this baby. Please don't have this baby. Like, I couldn't imagine having the baby without him there. And then when he did arrive, we only had about 30 days in between being on the island and him needing to be in Virginia. And so then he gets there and I'm like, this baby needs to come right now. Like, if she doesn't hurry up and come, he's not going to be here. And at the time, of course, you think that that's the end of the world. And how could I ever birth my baby without, you know, my partner? Obviously, I know now it wouldn't have been the end of the world. I would have done it. But we were trying everything under the sun to get her to come. We did the sweeps. I agreed to the sweeps, which I had said that I didn't want to do because I had this idea of I do want a natural birth, even if it was going to be in the hospital. But I did end up going and getting sweeps from the OB that I was seeing. And we did like acupuncture and, you know, got gym memberships so we could like try to walk the baby out, which was not helpful. All those little tips and tricks you hear, who's to say really? So at the time I'm seeing like OBs that rotate on, you know, so every week I was 35 weeks at that point. So I only got to meet each OB one time. And there was only one that I really enjoyed her. So I was really hopeful that it was going to be her. And I think we were probably like 43. And it was really starting to be like, okay, he's going to leave in like 4 or 5 days. So, you know, what are we going to do? I had considered doing an induction, but we weren't really at that point where I needed to decide that. And we had done some acupuncture one of those days, and I ended up having contractions. Prior to that, I hadn't really had any early labor or contractions. I didn't even know that I was having Braxton Hicks until my second pregnancy, when I realized, oh, these are Braxton Hicks. I did have these the first time. So I did have those, but I wasn't aware of it. So when I got contractions, it was like, whoa, that's what that is. And I got contractions for maybe like an hour. They were timable, and then they just completely went away. And that was right after we'd done the acupuncture. And then the following day, I think I woke up at like 7:45 in the morning and I had a really big contraction. And I'm like, well, that was weird. Let me just try and go back to sleep. Maybe it'll go away. You know, maybe the acupuncture kind of like messed things up. Mm-hmm. And tried to go back to sleep and immediately got another one. And I'm like, okay, I'm up. And I started going to the bathroom, like that clearing out. And I don't know why I like immediately recognize, you kind of like store information when you've had birth classes. And I immediately recognize that as being like, I'm having this baby, like, because I was having this unusual kind of like movement that I'm not usually having. And so I'm going to the bathroom, I'm contracting still about, it was 3 to 5 minutes from the very beginning. It was never really like a slow progression. And we drove about 45 minutes. Once it hit like the hour point, we drove 45 minutes to the hospital and we got checked in. And I think I was a 4 or 5, but regardless, they kept me. I had called my birth photographer and then my mom was also there with us. And I just remember laboring. I tend to like labor inwards and really like go into that labor land. I like close my eyes and, you know, it's just me and myself. And I'm just like talking to the Lord and trying to get through it. And that's just kind of what I did. I remember being in the bathtub a couple times and trying to use the water. And I remember at one point feeling like, man, I could really ask for the epidural right now, but mm-hmm. I knew I didn't want the epidural. I have like a really big fear of needles. And so the fear of needles was enough to keep me from wanting to do the epidural, which isn't, it's not a substantial ground to stand on, but it worked for me. And yeah, I ended up just kind of laboring away. And when I got to that point that I thought, I feel like if someone asked me if I wanted the epidural, like I could see it happening. And again, it was just one of those moments where I'm like, this is transition. I know that when I start, you know, doing some crazy talk, thinking that I can't do it, this is maybe the time where my, you know, things are ramping up and I'm kind of like towards the end. And I was, I got into the bed for a check and I believe I was like a 9, close to a 10, and I had a bulging bag. And my OB, knowing she knew my birth plan, but she did ask if I wanted my waters broken, which I had on my birth plan that I didn't. I didn't even want them to ask. They were very good about not asking me if I wanted pain management. Once I had told them, like, I'm doing this natural, I don't want an epidural, no one asked me. But with the water, she left it up to me. But when you have someone dangling, you know, that in front of you, like, this could be over sooner, you could meet your baby now, of course you're going to be like, oh, I mean, so I didn't have as much of a conviction about not getting my waters broken as I had about the epidural. So I didn't really mind one way or the other with that. So I did agree to having my waters broken. So she broke my water and she's like, okay, well, you know, we could probably start pushing here soon. Do you want to do some practice pushes or do you want to wait for your body to just kind of do it on its own? And I'm like, I want to wait. And so she was like, okay, just let me know when you feel that, you know, urge that you want to try to push. I'm like, okay. So she leaves the room and the very next contraction I had, it was just like this, like my body was just trying to like expel the baby. Mm-hmm. Like, I know a lot of moms use the phrase of bearing down. For me, that's not what it felt like. It just felt like my body was like pushing my baby out and I didn't have to do anything to help it. It was just going to do it. My current midwife, she uses the phrase vomiting out of your vagina. Yes. And that is more what it feels like. It's like a, like it's going.
Totally. I've said that so many times too. Yeah.
That is exactly what it feels like. Mm. I didn't have to do anything. It was like, I'm pushing. And so like everyone comes back in the room and I knew I didn't want to birth on my back, but you're just in this space where I didn't have enough like mental energy to get up and get in a different position. So I was kind of like holding on to the hospital bed bar and I was in like a weird side lying kind of position. And I think one of the nurses was holding my legs up. And within 3 or 4 contractions, I mean, she was out. I wasn't pushing or anything. I do remember them telling me to stop screaming so much and that if I just were to put that screaming energy downward, that my baby would be here. And I know that that can be the case for a lot of moms, but for me, my body was doing the work. I didn't need to really help my body much. So I gave myself permission to scream my head off. And that's just how I birth. I mean, I learned that with my most recent one. I'm yelling, I'm hollering. Yeah. It was painful. So
and there's nothing wrong with that. And I really want to like emphasize that because I do work with a lot of women after their birth. And this is something that a lot of women feel maybe shame around or that they didn't, especially if they did maybe like a calm birthing class or mm-hmm. hypnobirthing, you know, they have this idea that they're supposed to be this serene goddess birthing all silent. Yeah. And some women do birth like that. But most, to be honest, that I've witnessed in all my years are not quiet and yeah. that actually roaring and screaming can be so powerful and help you birth your baby. And only you know that. Only you as the birthing mother knows if this is helping or not.
Yeah.
And you know what? We do things to help ourselves, whether that is sometimes to slow things down. You know, maybe sometimes it needs to go slower. And maybe that sound that you're screaming is not maybe helping the baby to be born. Maybe it's just because you need to keep that baby in a little bit longer just to like prepare yourself. There's wisdom in everything. And like, yeah, I think anyone who's listening to this, who's worried about screaming or sounding, don't like see it as a tool.
Yeah. And it's funny that you say that. I've never thought of it that way as far as maybe the screaming is helping to slow things down because they do say that your vocal cords are connected to your pelvic floor. And so, yeah, maybe the urge to scream is like your body's way of being like, you need to slow this baby down a little bit so that you don't, you know, tear.
Absolutely. What do we know? Like the wisdom of the birthing design, like it is divine And the more I learn from just witnessing woman birthing, the more I know I don't know.
Yeah.
In like that, the mystery, oh, I get goosebumps. It's mm-hmm. like, get out of the way and let the woman do her thing. Like, she knows. She's yeah. guided. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
This episode is sponsored by Needed, a beautiful woman-owned leading women's health supplement brand founded by two mamas who were shocked when they realized that 95% of women who actually take a prenatal vitamin have nutrient deficiencies. And it's shocking that this is the state of most of us in our current modern world. But our soils are depleted, and so our foods are not as nutrient dense, and who really eats all their greens every day? I've been extremely hesitant to recommend supplements because most of them are just expensive pee. The cheap one you buy at your chemist is most likely not bioavailable, meaning your body just can't absorb most of it, if any. I truly haven't found any other supplement brand that I would ever recommend to any of my clients, friends, or use myself than Needed. I myself use their multivitamins both in capsule form and in powder form, depending on what I feel like that day. I also use their pre and probiotics and collagen powder. I know it's clean, high quality, and beyond organic, and I can feel how my body absorbs it. With Needed, you get real nourishment for every phase of your life. Whether you're thinking, trying, are pregnant, or in your postpartum, or deeper into your mama years. With the code THENATURALBIRTHPODCAST, you can save 20% off your first order. Go to thisisneeded.com via the link in the show notes to get the automatic discount on their website.
She came out after, like I said, maybe like 3 or 4 contractions. And I definitely didn't have like a pushing phase. I didn't feel like I pushed. And I mean, she came out, I believe she was perfectly fine. All of that is really like a haze to me. I feel like I have a really bad memory in general. So I was happy to have a birth photographer there. But even then, a lot of it, I don't really recall. And it's sad, but I'm sure it's for a purpose. And I'm pretty sure she came out, they put her right on me. And I remember from the time that she came out, I was in the searing pain. I mean, the worst pain of my whole life from even then to now. I've never experienced pain like that. Nothing compared to like the ring of fire. It was like the feeling of the ring of fire, but not going away. And I did get pit. I was bleeding a little bit more than they'd like to see. And so my OB was trying to stitch me. And, you know, they're just like, look at your baby, look at your baby, focus on your baby. And my butt was just like off the bed. I could not handle the stitching. They tried numbing me. They tried giving me stuff for it. And I could not relax into it to allow her to stitch me. And I just felt bad because I was like screaming and crying and like, my baby's there and I want to connect with her so badly. And I just couldn't. And I'm just like crying saying, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, baby. And, you know, my OB was like, listen, if you can't sit still for this, I might have to take you to the OR because right now we're at a point where I could stitch it and things will be fine. But if we keep not being able to stitch it, I don't want to risk you hemorrhaging and us needing to move a little bit faster. And so I was like, you know, I'll try it one more time. Tried it again. And I physically couldn't. I'm like, you're just going to have to take me to the OR because I'm trying and I really just can't. My body is just reacting to it. And they'd already tried numbing me. And so in between this time, they start prepping the OR. In between the time of me going there, it felt like hours that I was in this pain. I'm sure it wasn't, but that's how it felt to me. And unfortunately, I recall thinking, I honestly just wish that I was dead. And this pain is so bad, like knock me out, especially to have that natural birth and then to have such a horrendous, like immediate postpartum time. It was really awful. And they tried giving me morphine, like nothing touched this pain. So finally they take me to the OR and come to find out I had had a hematoma in my labia And it was something that I noticed towards the end of my pregnancy, but I just thought it was maybe like an ingrown hair or something like that. I didn't think anything of it. And she nicked it coming out and it like burst open. So that's why I was in so much pain. My OB said, it's very rare. She said she's only ever seen two in her entire time practicing. And yeah, it was horrible.
Wow, that's so rare. And yeah, because I was like, when you were speaking, I was like, whoa, what kind of tear did she have? But then I was like, well, if the OB wants to do the stitches in the room, it means it wasn't a really bad tear, like, because that would, you know, directly be the OR. So I was like, okay, it can't be that. It must be that they can't see it. It must be inside. But it's a hematoma and it's so rare. I've never experienced that with a woman. And so that obviously was not related to birth, actually. Like, it was right. Obviously your baby nicked it, but that was because you had that hematoma without,
right,
you know, knowing, except yeah, you
yeah. And I mean, I always wonder, was it the position that I was in? And you know, I'll never know. I'd like to think like, oh, maybe if I was at home it wouldn't have happened like that, because I would have maybe birthed more slowly or used gravity or something. But you know, I'll never know, and I'm okay with that. I mean, I didn't have that conviction about postpartum. I knew like some things that I wanted to happen or didn't want to happen, but I do feel like, you know, the hospital is there for a reason. And I was grateful to have that option at that time. And I'm really okay with it. I mean, yes, it was painful, but I didn't leave feeling traumatized. And funny enough, before we had even left the hospital, I was like, yeah, I'd do that again. 100% mm-hmm. I would do it again. I mean, I did do it again. So obviously wasn't that bad, but it was. It was not.
Oh, yeah. That was a very rare occurrence, obviously, and very unlikely that that'll happen again, which is nice to know. And you still, because you had that physiological natural birth, you did have that high of oxytocin that also probably helped you have that feeling that I could do that again, which is lovely. And it sounds like they were really good at respecting your birth plan and choices. I mean, she did offer the breaking of the waters, and yeah, that did speed up, obviously, things to a maximum, which is risk and the benefit, depending on how you look at it. You know, it is a tool for those who wish to potentially speed things up, but it also means usually can get also really overwhelming and go really quickly. For some women, it becomes a shock.
Yeah.
So that's also good to know that it's not benign. Nothing, you know, nothing really is. So, wow, what a first birth. So how long until you became pregnant again?
5 years. Yeah. So there's 5 years separating. Yeah. And I can kind of dive into that.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. So in between having my daughter, when my daughter was about 3 months, we moved to Colorado. That was kind of my ex's next duty station. So that's where we were living. We did end up going through a divorce. And shortly after that, I met my now husband. And it's funny because like dating when you have children is a lot different. It's like dating with like this bigger purpose and there's no messing around. I mean, when we met, it was just like instantly like, yeah, we're doing this. We're in. This is serious. And it was like that from the beginning. So immediately, like he is truly the only father that my daughter's known from the time she was like 1.5. And he instantly like stepped into that role. When we got married, we started trying right away because he did know that I struggled with infertility before. I mean, infertility. I use quotes because it's hard to really know with not tracking the way I should have been. At this point, when we're married, I've become a birth photographer and I've taken doula classes. And so I'm like really in the birth world at that point, and I know a lot more. And so we get married, we start trying, we have a move to Texas. And amongst all that is like co-parenting drama and everything that comes along with that. And then an adoption was put on the table. My ex-husband surrendered his rights. And so my husband was all too excited to adopt my daughter. He was so excited to be able to be given that opportunity. So we're going through the adoption process. and trying to get pregnant at the same time. It was like the perfect storm of way too much going on emotionally to think that that was really going to work out. And we always joked in a funny, not funny kind of way that we wouldn't get pregnant until the adoption was finalized, just because having that like door open and the anxiety and stress that comes with, is this going to go through? Is everything going to be okay? Or like waiting for the other shoe to drop. So we kind of joked that, you know, probably won't get pregnant until that's settled. And because I'm a birth photographer, when we moved to Texas, I met with some midwives, some birth centers, just to kind of form connections and try to get clients and have like a mutual relationship. And so I met with this one midwife and we instantly started talking about like birth philosophies, and we just really hit it off. It was like kindred spirits. And to this day, she's my favorite person. And she let me know that they did do infertility work. I had told her some of my history, and you know, my husband and I had been trying at that point for probably over a year. And she ended up doing some labs on me and putting me on some supplements just to kind of help my ovulation, like support it and make sure that it was doing the best it could possibly do. And I was on those supplements for probably 6 months before we conceived, and really 3 months of actually trying. So my current husband's also in the military, and he was away for, I mean, a month at a time, 3 months at a time. So watching those ovulations like tick by, like, okay, that's an ovulation you missed. That's an ovulation. It's like watching possible babies just disappear before your eyes. It was really hard. But so as far as him being here and actually opportunities to try, I think it probably took us 3 tries to get pregnant, but this was over the span of almost 2 years. And so finally get pregnant. And this pregnancy with my son was like the opposite of with my daughter. With my daughter, both of them, I felt like very much in my own skin. I never felt more beautiful. I never felt more like the best version of myself. I loved being big. I loved being pregnant and like having that belly. And I just felt like this is what I'm supposed to do. It just felt so natural to be pregnant. I've suffered with migraines my whole life. With my daughter, I did not have a single migraine. With my son, so this tells me it's maybe hormonal. With my son, I had migraines and headaches 3 to 4 times a week in the first trimester. It was so bad. I was sleeping on our bathroom floor, our bedroom floor. I was sleeping in the shower. I was sleeping anywhere that gave me relief from my head just throbbing. I tried IVs. I tried teas. I tried so many things, and I don't know. It must have been hormonal, but it was awful. And my poor husband, he was probably like so excited. I talk so highly about being pregnant. I'm like, oh, it's amazing. I never get headaches, never get migraines. I just feel so beautiful. And he's just like looking at me like, what are you talking about? You are miserable. And that's how I felt. I mean, I really felt like miserable on the inside. It wasn't a fun time, but I was having a wild pregnancy for the most part. That midwife that I met, Anita, she was very, very on board for me kind of like taking my care into my own hands. And she knew that I knew what I was looking for. And she knew that I would ask if I felt any kind of way, if my intuition was telling me something wasn't right. She knew that I would speak up and, you know, kind of ask for assistance and guidance. And I'm still taking births at this time. So from the time I had my daughter to the time I had my son, I probably attended over 70 births. So I really had lots of like birth knowledge in my head, just kind of, you know, playing on repeat. And I'm trying to like push that aside and focus on this pregnancy, my pregnancy. And it was really hard. I mean, there were times that we would have a hard birth and I'd be like, listen, I just need to hear my baby's heartbeat. I need to come in. Can you please listen for the heartbeat and let me know, you know, everything's okay, quote unquote, okay. And it was a permission that I gave myself, because I knew that every time I felt like, I feel like my baby's okay, but I need that validation. And every time I was validated, it helped me trust my intuition more. So it was like the next time I felt like, you know, oh, I don't know, I would remind myself, okay, well, you didn't know last time. You thought everything was okay. You checked it out. It was okay. You can trust yourself. These are the facts. You've trusted yourself in the past and you were right. And so now you can let go. And that's what it was for me through most of it, was just kind of surrendering. And for the most part, yeah, I had a wild pregnancy. I did do some labs to kind of keep an eye on my like ferritin. I had very low ferritin. And I just,
for anyone that's listening, ferritin is iron stores, if you didn't know.
Yeah. So mine was at like, I think a 9 at one point. And I don't know too terribly much about it, but I knew, I think that's the benefit of having a midwife that you trust, that you can go to. I knew that she wasn't going to pull my leg and make me do something that wasn't absolutely necessary for me. And so she had me doing some iron supplements, and I was okay with that because, again, I trusted her and I knew that she wasn't going to have me doing anything that wasn't going to be beneficial. So yeah, I did that. I had been planning to have a free birth at this time, and my husband was 100% on board for that. And yeah, I went to 40 weeks exactly. My daughter was born on June 18th of 2018. And then my son was due on June 23rd, 2023. And I was like, oh, that'd be so great. I'd have like birthdays that align with the years. It'll be easy to remember. And I'm like, Lord, please, please, you know my memory. I need this baby on, you know, 6/23/23 to match my 6/18/18 child. And the night before I went into labor, we stayed up late watching like Dungeons and Dragons or something. My husband fell asleep on the couch and I tried to go to bed with him, and I really just, I could not fall asleep for the life of me. And I just felt so heavy and burdened and emotional. And I came out to our living room and I just sat on the floor and I really just cried. I cried and I prayed and I was like, Lord, I don't feel adequate. Like, I don't feel good enough as a parent. I don't feel like I'm a good mom. And I just kind of like, the floodgates opened. It was all the things that I, towards the end of my pregnancy, and I had voiced some of these things to my husband, and he tried to walk me through it, but he just heard in his head, like, I didn't want this baby. And that's not what it was. It was just so complex. I just felt like I was losing this relationship with my daughter, and I was so concerned about how she would feel. We've never kept the adoption from her. She knows, but I just projected my feelings. I'm like, is she going to feel less of my husband's daughter than this child? Is she going to feel like she's not part of the family? Like, just all these insecurities that I had, just being overly concerned about her, which is what we do as parents, but they just all started like closing in on me towards the end of pregnancy, that I just felt like I'm ruining this bond that I have with her and I'm betraying her. This really strong feeling of I'm betraying her. I'm betraying our relationship. I felt like so much of her life, it was just her and I. And I mean, it wasn't. My husband was there for 4.5 years, but I just felt like I was betraying this bond that we had. And so I'm just sitting on the floor and just praying, like, you know, I'm not a good mom. How am I going to do it with two? And, you know, my relationship with her is going to change. And I felt this weird feeling and I'm like, what is going on? So I go to the bathroom and sure enough, my mucus plug had started to come out and I see the mucus plug and I go, oh, okay. That makes sense. The emotional just like turmoil that I was in, and then to see the mucus plug. And so I go back and forth from the bathroom to the couch, just like praying and crying. And every time I go to the bathroom, there's more plug. And I was kind of having way too much fun, like pulling it out. It wasn't like it didn't come all the way out. I was just like pulling it out, which I feel like I did with my daughter too, because I vividly recall it being familiar. Like I didn't just lose my plug with my daughter. I feel like it came out the same way where like I could really like reach in and like pull it out. Very odd. I tried to go to bed because I thought, okay, if this starts to ramp up a little bit, I'm going to want to rest. I should take my own advice. I know how this goes. And so I try to lay down and rest and I start getting timeable contractions. And I think I had like maybe three and I could not lay there anymore. It was so painful. Not painful. It was intense. They started coming 3 to 5 minutes apart just right away. And right away they were intense, hard. And this part is very foggy for me, but I know I was like putzing around for a couple hours, like on my own. I know my daughter woke up, and when she woke up, it was kind of like, okay, this is it. You know, she's up. We're starting our day. We're starting this, you know, contraction thing, this labor. And her and my husband started baking a cake because we were going to do a birthday cake. That was one of the things that we planned to have her do to feel kind of like included. I had gotten her like a little Polaroid camera so that she could take pictures. We had gotten her a digital camera. She really enjoys that. And then we said that she was going to do a birthday cake. So they start working on the birthday cake. And I had called my photographer and my friend who is a doula. And I gave them the heads up. My photographer was 3 hours away. So I wanted her to come like ASAP. And so she starts making her way. And I'm showering. I call for my doula because I think I felt so much pressure that my photographer was coming from so far away. It was such a big investment. And I knew how it was when you kind of have people come into your space. I didn't want things to slow down. And so I knew I wanted my friend Tristan here to kind of like make sure things continue to progress and just encourage like optimal positioning and all that kind of stuff. I just didn't want everyone to waste their time. And that was probably the hardest part of this labor, was being so focused on everyone else and how much time they were spending with me and if I was taking away or inconveniencing them. And I don't know why that was such a concern of mine.
The enrollment for the Sacred Birthworker Mentorship starting in August 2024 has begun. This mentorship is for you who want to walk alongside women through her rite of passage from maiden to mother and provide a safe, sacred, and physiological birth space in any birth setting, home, birth center, or in a hospital. You who recognizes birth as a sacred portal and a life-altering event worthy of honoring, safeguarding, and celebrating. I'm calling in you who have a longing to work with women throughout pregnancy, birth, and the postpartum, and who want a deep, rich, holistic, and comprehensive training way beyond a doula training. This mentorship weaves ancient and modern knowledge of her story, women's wisdom, physiological birth knowledge and skills, as well as knowledge about medicalized birth, human rights, and sacred birth advocacy, as well as the art of sacred space holding and tapping into feminine embodiment and spiritual practices to help you become the clearest channel and space holder for women and their families. You will be so held and nurtured and supported for a whole year inside our worldwide community as you learn and embody the teachings and skills and start sharing your gifts with the world. Through monthly live masterclasses, Q&As, birth debriefing and sharing and support circles, peer-to-peer meetings, access to our vast, rich, and comprehensive online learning portal, as well as one-on-one mentoring with me, This program is like no other in its depth of value and the amount of support that you'll receive. If you feel a deep calling to serve as the custodian of the sacred at the birth altar, and your intuition is ringing clear as you hear this, then head on over to sacredbirthinternational.com to learn more about this mentorship program and apply, or click on the link in the show notes.
So at this point, I am in the shower and my friend Tristan had arrived and my birth photographer arrived, and things did slow down just slightly. I mean, I think they spaced out to about 8 to 10 minutes apart. And I remember telling Tristan, I need these to keep going. Like, I'm feeling like they're spacing out. Like, it was probably like 4 a.m. at this point. So not too bad, but I'd already been up all day and I hadn't slept. So she put me on the peanut ball and we just kind of like chatted. My daughter came and snuggled up against me and I had my leg over the peanut ball. And we were just kind of chatting about like birth position and maybe the fact that he had maybe a tight cord. We were just kind of thinking like, you know, what's kind of going on. I knew that he was OP. He'd been OP for weeks. And at that point, we had already been trying to do like the miles circuit and encourage him to like turn a little bit. And so we were kind of thinking like, well, maybe he can't turn because he has a tight cord. So, you know, that could be a reason. And
so for anyone who doesn't know OP, that means his back towards your back.
Yes.
And so that can be a trickier position. So do you mean that during your labor right now, you have something that is making you concerned in any way? Why would you start discussing his short cord or his position?
I'm not sure. I think that I was thinking things were going to go faster. My daughter, my labor was about 10 hours. And I just had this idea in my head that I'm going to have this crazy fast birth. Because I thought 10 hours, it can only go down from here.
Most of the time, not always though, does it?
Right. No, not always. And so I think we had just kind of been discussing like, you know, he was probably still in this OP position, which was why it wasn't as rapid as I anticipated it being. And because we had been trying to encourage him to turn a little bit so that it would be a little bit faster, and nothing was working, we were just kind of discussing. I think that's part of like being a birth worker. It's hard to like turn that side off of like analyzing everything. And so that was like our small talk, was talking about the baby maybe having a tight cord. But I wasn't concerned at all. I didn't do any checks in labor. I didn't listen to Doppler or anything like that. I really just was in the labor. And I was, for the most part, keeping my eyes shut and just focusing on that. So after I laid on the peanut ball for a while, I moved from being on the birth stool, being on the birth ball, and then I did feel like things were getting a little bit more intense. And I knew that I wanted my midwife to be there once I was pushing. Postpartum was not in my kind of like realm of understanding at all. I did not put in a lot of work to understanding what was going to happen in postpartum and managing that. I did feel confident in like birth emergencies, quote unquote emergencies or variations. I did know kind of what to look for or what would maybe be concerning for me. And I didn't feel that way with postpartum. I did not educate myself enough on that. And I just knew I wasn't as convicted to have this unmanaged postpartum. I knew I wanted that support in the postpartum. So I wanted her there for pushing so that if anything were to arise, especially with a low ferritin, which isn't necessarily, you know, a concern for everyone, of course, I want to say, but for me, I felt like I was slightly concerned about it because I did have that hematoma with my daughter. And so I didn't have a clear picture of what postpartum looked like, immediate postpartum. And even knowing what my labor looked like, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be the same every time. But I felt like my labor was this way with her. It will probably be this way with him. And not having an idea of what that immediate postpartum looked like undisturbed, I just felt more confident with her being there. So she arrived a little bit closer to pushing. And this is kind of like the part that I have such a hard time with, because I do feel like I had my free birth. And she would say, I just doula'd you. Like I did not act as a midwife and you had your free birth. But I feel like it's so hard for me to say I had a midwife there and then to also call it a free birth. Like I feel like an imposter, even though both her and I would say I felt like I had a free birth. It just feels like I need permission from other people to call it that. And that's been really hard for me even now to like own that and feel comfortable and confident in that.
Well, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what you call it. It's like you had a sovereign birth. You made the decision when you wanted your midwife there and in the way you wanted her there, in what capacity. Yeah. So really, it doesn't matter, does it? If it's like what you call it, you truly had a sovereign birth. It was your choice the whole way through. And I think that's the most important, not what kind of birth you have, but that you had a sovereign one.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was a good one. It was one that I can look back and be like, I loved that experience. So I definitely agree that it's far more important than any kind of label. But so she arrived and she said a little prayer over me. She did like this great like massage on my back. And she obviously was aware of baby's position. And so she gave me a nice little massage and she said a prayer over us. And it was just so beautiful. And she was like, you know, it's been a while since I've doula'd someone and can kind of like pull some things out of my hat. And I was like, I am ready to get this baby in a better position and do some leg work. So I did some like high knees and I would squat down in between contractions and like sway my hips. I was like holding a Rebozo over my husband and trying to sway my hips. And I had to go like upside down on the birth ball, which I'd had clients do that before. And it was very painful. I even faked a contraction to like be done with that. She's like, just give me three more. And I'm like, okay. Oh, like just to be done with that. And then we also had this fun little wall maneuver that we did where I had my back up against the wall and my knees slightly bent and my husband lifted my belly and pushed in towards my spine. And I could feel what it was doing. It was very, very painful. It was the most intense part, but I knew I could picture in my head what was happening. And that was the benefit of having that prior education, because it made it so that I could continue on and kind of withstand. So after all that, I mean, there were parts of that where she'd be like, you know what, just give me a couple more. And we'd done so many births together at that point that I'm like, I know when you say one more, it's really five more. So I'm not falling for your tricks. And so we did all those kind of like motions to get him in a better position. And then I got into the bathtub and we had a birth pool. Like I had gotten a mini dip from Target, which was just like a cute little aesthetic kind of pool. And I didn't know as though I wanted to be in the water because I didn't find it very comfortable during my pregnancy. I just didn't feel like I could get a good grip. And sure enough, the adapter for the hose didn't work. And then I think we like filled it too soon. So the water was cold and that was just like, you know, forget it. So we got into my bathtub, which is pretty big. And I think I got the urge to push in there one time and I was immediately like, nope, I do not want to be in here. I mean, I couldn't get a grip at all. There was just nowhere to like hold and like really like focus in on what I was going to have to do. And so I got out of there and I was using the bathroom before we were going to head to the birth stool because I did feel that like throwing up feeling. And so I tried to like lean into that in the tub, but I just couldn't get comfortable. And so the next couple contractions that I had, that feeling wasn't present. And I was like, okay, I just don't think that this is the position. And so I went to the bathroom one more time before I was going to head to the stool. And I just remember sitting there feeling so defeated. And Tristan came up to me and she was just like, what is holding you back right now? What is going on? Why are you not like there? And I'm like, you know, I just feel like I'm not a good mom. Like I'm not, that fear came back up of I'm not a good mom. How am I going to do this? Like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to push this baby out because I don't feel connected to this baby at all. I feel zero connection. I don't, why would I want to go through all this pain when I don't feel a connection? And she's like, look at me. She's like, look at my eyes. Look at me right now. You are a good mom. You have everything that you need to have this baby. And I can't recall entirely what she said, but just one of those things where you're like, okay, that's what I needed. That's what I needed to hear. Just reassuring me that like, I'm already a good mom and I'm going to be a great mom again. And so I go out to the birth stool. And I remember at this point, my husband is like in the kitchen or something. I think I had asked him for something, but I'm sitting on the birth stool and I'm like looking out into my kitchen. We have like this open floor plan. And I'm like, what is he doing right now? Where is he? What is he doing? What, like, whatever he's doing is not important right now. I need him. And he's like, I'm getting the thing that you asked me for. And I'm like, you need to sit down right now. Like I'm about to have this baby. I don't think he understood that that urge was right there. And I was going to push this baby out. And so he sits on the birth ball and I'm like, get off that birth ball. I need you right here on the floor in front of my stool. And my daughter was interested in helping. So both my daughter and him were sitting right in front of the birth stool. And all of a sudden my water just pops and it bursts all over them. Like it soaked my daughter from like the shoulders down. And I remember it being slightly painful because I didn't experience my water breaking before. I just felt like there was so much pressure and it breaking, like it didn't feel like a relief, like a lot of moms experience. For me, it kind of was shocking. And I feel like because it was shocking, it was painful in that way. And that kind of traumatized my daughter. She still talks about how disgusting it was that my water broke all over her. And she was now scared to catch the baby. But I did get, I think, another contraction. And immediately after my water breaking, his head started coming down. I remember hearing my midwife say, okay, slow, 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 ease him out, ease him out. And that was so helpful to me. And it took all my concentration to kind of like ease his head out. But I didn't end up tearing. And I was very thankful for her guidance. Not that, you know, he was just going to fall right out, but it was very helpful to hear like, okay, and now ease him out, like just let him out. And I was holding on to the Rebozo. And I just remember at once his head was out and I felt like his shoulders starting to turn, it was like, get him out right now. And he came right out. He did have a tight cord. And my husband brought him up to me. And again, this is all like a haze, but I just remember like looking him over and just like being somewhat in disbelief that like he just came out of me and that I just did that. And my daughter's just like fawning over him, like holding his hands and like touching his cheeks. And she's just obsessed. My husband's like coming around the corner. My placenta had come out almost immediately, like within 5 minutes, maybe it had come out, but it was hanging on by the membranes. And I'm still sitting on the birth pool, like naked from the waist down with my baby, Vernix everywhere. And he's coming around the corner with this birthday cake. And he's like, are we doing this now? And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like everyone on the birth team is just kind of looking at him like, are you joking? Is this a joke? And he's like, what? Like, he was just so happy. And he's very like on to the next, like he's trying to clean things up. And like, he's like a little worker, you know, that's just his love language. And so I end up trying to stand up to get the placenta to come. And as soon as I stood, it came right out. And I sat for a little bit on a towel. And then we moved from there into my bedroom. And this was all just kind of like that newborn haze, newborn bliss. And I think I started nursing. And yeah, I mean, it was easygoing. I was concerned about time still. I was still thinking about how you know, everyone's still here. I didn't really get to look at my placenta because it just seemed a little rushed because I was trying to manage everyone's time and make sure that like no one was going to be inconvenienced by me. So I did get some care afterwards. My midwife just looked and made sure I didn't have any tears. And yeah, it was great. I did have a prolapse. I did get, I think I had Angelica and I took some Angelica for my bleeding. I did get PIT because I had a prolapse and my uterus was maybe a little bit boggy. And I was okay with that. Like I said before, the postpartum, to me, I'm okay with it being a little bit managed. So I did have that. And
what was the management for your prolapse? What did the midwife do for you?
So she just manually pushed it back in and gave me the PIT and held it until everything contracted. And then following that, I've been doing pelvic floor therapy.
Yeah, beautiful. And no issues after that?
No. Yeah. Beautiful. I did have some retained placenta. Ironically, I do placenta encapsulation. So when I saw it come out, I knew immediately, I'm like, I had a retained placenta because I had a little bit more bleeding than what I recalled having with my daughter. And so we were keeping an eye on it. But then when I had seen a piece of the placenta come out, I'm like, okay, this makes sense. So I did go for an ultrasound sometime after to make sure that everything was out and it was just that small piece that had come. But that was something that it wasn't too big of a deal to me. And it didn't really impact too terribly much. But because I had the prolapse, I did lay in bed. God bless my husband. He brought me breakfast, lunch, and dinner in bed every day for days. And then he got to be home with us for over 70 days.
Mm.
It was amazing. I did have like postpartum depression and anxiety with him. And I'm not sure exactly why, but with my daughter, I didn't have that at all. Even though I was alone with her, I had like sleep paralysis with her, but I didn't have postpartum depression. And with him, I did. I feel like I just tried to do too much too soon. Like
Probably.
Trying to dance with, that was like a nightmare, putting on clothes, trying to get out of the house. Like it was all just too much. And even though we waited quite a while, because we did plan for waiting, it still felt like too much too fast.
Yeah. And usually it is a big transition. I mean, you mentioned throughout this labor and also in your pregnancy that, you know, that what you were going through with your daughter and like, how can I ever love a second child as much as the first? And will she feel this and that? And am I a good mother? And will I be able to be a good mother for both? And I think actually that's super common. Yeah. To go through more or less, right? And I love that you brought that to surface because I think if anyone's listening might be, you know, expecting their second or third or fifth, you know, it's always going to probably be that fear of like, how will this change my family? Because it does, it changes the family dynamic. And then the postpartum is such a delicate time. And even us who know sometimes are not great actually at fully preparing for a nourishing postpartum. So important, isn't it? And you can't overdo it, the nourishing of the postpartum. Like you need to almost plan to overdo it to actually do it optimally. Like, because as women, we're really bad at asking for help and getting the support we need and really, you know, thinking we need to be the superwoman. And I do think that that is what causes postpartum depression in many, many cases.
Yeah.
Depletion and feeling unsupported. And even though people might offer, it's not always that the woman herself is good at accepting or allowing that as well, right?
Yeah.
So if you had a first-time mom in front of you right now who's about to have her first baby and she really wants to have a natural and empowering birth experience, what advice and pearls of wisdom would you give to her?
Well, the first would be to have a plan. Like there's a level of planning that goes into it. If you know you want to do it naturally, maybe have some ideas of what you might do instead when you start to feel that pain or discomfort, some sort of plan, like I'm gonna do water, or I'm gonna do bouncing on the ball, or I'm gonna pray or worship, or, you know, have some kind of idea of what might ground you. And then secondly, I would say to just meditate on the fact that you can do it and focus on the fact that you can do it. I don't want to say there's nothing special about the women who do it naturally, but realistically, we're not any different. Our bodies are not any different than someone who says they can't do it. There's nothing different about us, really, that we are not experiencing the same pain or the same intensity. You just have to tell yourself that you can do it and your body will do it. There's a difference between wanting to do it and being able to do it, and you can do it and your body will do it. It's just whether or not you kind of like give into that idea of it will be painful. It might hurt, but it's okay. And it's going to be pain with a purpose. And the last thing I would say is that it is okay to not feel a connection. I feel like so much in the birth world, it's like, you know, connect with your baby, spend time connecting with your baby. And it's okay to not feel this crazy connection. Like, you have to be okay with, I am connected to my baby because my baby is part of me. Mm-hmm. And the connection doesn't have to go this crazy deep route for you to give birth to your baby and grow that bond and be a great mother to them. You don't have to feel this crazy like elation in order to have your baby and have a good, healthy bond with them and a maternal instinct and everything that goes along with being a parent.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for coming and sharing your stories with us. It's been a pleasure having you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening. If you love this podcast, then please consider sharing it. Leave a review or make a contribution on our Patreon page. And if you want to connect on social media, then find the podcast on Instagram as The Natural Birth Podcast. Thank you for listening.